Imagine managing an employee whose daily job involves, removing children from abusive homes.
Right.
And then, well, imagine trying to evaluate their quarterly performance based on standard corporate metrics and KPIs. It feels entirely inadequate or maybe even absurd.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it is a completely different paradigm of work. And applying a standard business management model to that kind of trauma-heavy environment, it usually just ends in disaster.
Right. And that friction is really the core of our deep dive today. We have this fascinating stack of sources on the table, primarily centered on South Africa's 2012 supervision framework for the social work profession.
Along with some historical context notes, yeah.
Exactly. So our mission today is to unpack why managing social workers requires a radically different playbook than standard corporate management, and how this specific framework prevents systemic burnout.
Which is so important, because if you have ever felt overwhelmed at a high-stakes job, you will see why deploying the right kind of supervision is literally a matter of professional survival.
Completely.
Yeah.
So to understand why this framework was created, we need to look at the crisis that precipitated it, right? Back in 2003, South Africa had to officially declare social work a scarce skill.
They were just hemorrhaging talent at that point.
Yeah, the documentation notes that ambient trauma and high caseloads were major factors, but also highlights this critical structural failure, which was direct management by non-social workers.
Right, the service quality just plummeted when social workers were managed by people who didn't truly understand the nature of the job.
It makes sense. I mean, it is like a hospital administrator trying to teach a surgeon how to perform a bypass. But I want to push back on this just a little bit. Shouldn't a fundamentally good manager, like someone skilled in leadership and operations, be capable of managing any team?
Well, a general manager can absolutely handle an organization's budget or, optimize schedules or manage HR disputes.
Sure, the admin stuff.
Exactly. But they cannot logically guide a frontline worker through the unpredictable, highly individualized trauma of a complex welfare case. So the framework actually enforces a strict legal reality.
Under the Social Service Professions Act, right?
Yes, under that act, social workers must be supervised on social work matters exclusively by other competent registered social workers.
Because standard administrative oversight just wasn't stopping the burnout. So the framework mandates this unique three-pronged approach to supervision. They break it down into three pillars.
Right. There is the normative pillar, which is the administrative side, ensuring legal compliance. Then formative, which focuses on ongoing education.
And restorative. And I want to focus on that last one, the restorative pillar, for a second. Because looking at this way, under this legal framework, is the supervisor basically forced to act as a therapist for their own employee?
No, not at all. And the framework draws a very hard line there. The restorative pillar isn't about personal therapy. It is operational emotional triage.
Operational emotional triage. Okay, so what does that actually look like in practice?
Well, the supervisor is not asking the employee to delve into their childhood trauma. They are using structured debriefing protocols. So they might ask, how did that specific case file affect your ability to detach when you went home yesterday?
Oh, wow. Okay. Or something like, what coping mechanisms are you using to process hostility from a client?
Precisely. It is strictly about managing job-related stressors so the employee can mobilize the emotional energy needed to deliver services the next day.
It sounds like an incredibly intense relationship. You aren't just checking off a to-do list. You are actively monitoring someone's psychological capacity to do their job.
It is intense. And to make that level of supervision actually possible, the framework dictates strict ratios. A supervisor can handle a maximum of 13 supervisees in the same office.
13. And if I remember the source correctly, if that supervisor is also handling their own casework, the ratio drops down to just one supervisor for every three social workers.
Yes, exactly 1 to 3.
Stop and think about that ratio in the context of a standard corporate environment. Imagine a corporate manager only being allowed to have 3 direct reports because the emotional load of managing them is just so heavy.
It really proves they view this supervision as actual heavy lifting. And they don't expect workers to internalize these coping mechanisms overnight either.
Yeah, far from it. Newly qualified social workers must receive this structured fortnightly supervision for at least 3 full years before they can be elevated.
Right, to a more independent consultative level.
3 full years of legally mandated biweekly structured support. I mean, compare that to a standard corporate probation period where you get, what, 90 days? A quick performance review, and then you're left to your own devices.
Exactly. The framework recognizes that building the resilience required to handle constant trauma while also mastering those normative and formative skills, it takes years of active incubation.
It really demonstrates that good leadership cannot be a one-size-fits-all model. In high-trauma, high-stakes fields, leadership must move beyond just administration.
Right, it has to be intentionally restorative and deeply embedded in the daily reality of the work.
So true. Well, here's the final thought to leave you with today, something to mull over on your own. If a government had to legally mandate years of intensive emotional and educational support just to keep its workers from collapsing under the strain, what does that reveal about our casual, hands-off approach to burnout in other high-stakes professions?